user. Everyone in her group.
The Vindicator, history reported daily.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Vindy Sports Live right here on Vindy.com and on The Vindicator's Facebook page. My name is Corey Christen, and today we have a very full panel. I think the first time in a long time, if not ever, we've had four people on today's panel. Sitting next to me is reporter Tom Williams. Diagonal from me, Brian Zenis, and then right across from me is sports editor Ed Puskas, Kyle Murray, the technical director, and gentlemen, today a packed show. But first, in the first segment today, it goes without any sort of hesitation that we pay tribute to a Valley coaching legend that we lost this week. Fitch head football coach Phil Anarella passed away recently at the age of 70. He coached at numerous stops here in the Mahoning and the Shenango Valleys, East Liverpool, Rayan School, Warren Western Reserve, Warren Harding, Hickory, Niles, and his last stop at Austintown Fitch. Ed, you were the one to kind of put the opinionated article out to, you know, express your thoughts. And for those that don't know, the service for Coach Anarella is going to be tomorrow from 2 to 8, six-hour service at
calling
Fitch's.
Calling hours.
That's right, calling hours at Austintown Fitch's auditorium. And Ed, just kind of your general thoughts right now. I know, again, a very emotional week here in the Valley as Coach Anarella moves on.
Yeah, it's a tough time. Phil was a guy that I've known since '95 when I started in Warren. Covered him at numerous stops, including at Fitch. Just a stand-up guy, a guy who could be stern with players. He gave no quarter to guys who didn't want to toe the line, didn't want to put in the work. He could be your best friend, or he could be hard on you as a player. And I think that what you're going to find tomorrow at Fitch is that a lot of these guys who played for him over the years, whether it was here at Fitch or even going back to the 80s and at Warren Western Reserve, wherever, are going to come and pay tribute to a guy who really shaped their lives.
38 seasons worth of players that have been under his umbrella. He was a winning football coach at that, too. 246, 146, and 3 record. But record aside, Brian, you look at coaches in this valley that do a great job of molding young men, as Coach Anarella did, but to do it for nearly 40 years, that's legendary status you're reaching there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to borrow a phrase. Ed shared with me a message from Steve Ruman the day he died, and reading what he said, I kind of share that opinion too. Ruman said, and this is kind of paraphrasing, that he contests that Phil Anarella's 1990 state championship with the newly combined Warren Western Reserve and Warren Harding is the greatest coaching job in Valley sports, in any sport. I was a toddler when that happened, but you combine two rival schools together and then win a state championship. I mean, that's insane, and I don't think that's something that just any coach can do.
All the talent on that, you mentioned that 1990 championship team with Warren Western Reserve, future Ohio State players, so many local legends to play, Tom, and just looking back, as kind of Ed said, going back to the 80s and the 90s to transform the game for so many players and to evolve with how football evolves. I mean, this is one of the top tier coaches we've ever seen in the long storied history of Valley football.
Yes, it is. And you can tell by where he was doing his coaching at. He was doing it at Warren Harding, and then he ends up at Austintown Fitch. They're two of our three biggest school district programs that there are, which means that you're playing up until last year. Fitch was the last of the Division I teams playing the top talent. So when they would get into the playoffs, it was as tough of a challenge, as tough of a road to get past that first game and continue on. I mean, it was real challenging. It's a testament to Phil with how he had those teams competitive. And it seemed like almost every time I went to a game there, if they weren't winning it, at least it was a competitive game. I really don't remember Fitch suffering too many blowouts, at least for the ones where I was at, and that made for interesting stories to tell.
And Ed, you wrote about it in your column. The big thing that Annarella did was help unify the city of Warren when it was West Side with Western Reserve and East Side versus Harding. That community, that city, that town coming together with the football championship, you know, sometimes they say, you know, sports is just the game, but really with Annarella, and I'm sure the players will testify as well, it was way more than just a football game.
Sure. You know, and to kind of frame it into, you know, terms that everyone in the Valley can understand, it would be like Ursuline and Mooney combining and winning a state championship, or Poland and Canfield combining and winning a state championship.
Which some people are probably shaking their heads at right now, like, how could that ever happen?
Yeah, I mean, unless, you know, I wasn't a native of Warren. I went there to work in 1995, but even then, you know, 5 years into that forced marriage, you know, there were people on both sides of town who had they wanted no part of it. You know, it was not something that they wanted. And if you were on the West Side, you hated Harding. If you were on the East Side, you hated Western Reserve. And they brought those two programs together, those two schools, all those students, all the people on both sides of town. You know, they kept the Harding name, took the Reserve colors and nickname, and it worked. And you know, I mentioned in the column, I think, you know, there's probably a book to be written about it at some point. I can't believe it hasn't been done yet. You know, or a movie. If we can have a movie called Roll Red Roll or Maslin Proud, you know, whatever the Maslin Tigers movie was called, I forget now. But I think
right, somebody call Shappas.
I think the Warren story is just as compelling, if not more so. You know, especially for those who lived through it.
Yeah, well, comparing it to Roll Red Roll, I mean, that would be a positive story that would be told.
Exactly.
About two schools coming together and do whatever. Roll Red Roll, which is going to air next week on PBS, for those of you who get a chance to see it, you're going to see a completely different story.
I mean, just attesting, you know, what Ed said about, you know, how divided Warren was, you know, before that merger. I mean, I covered two games at, you know, Warren Harding's Mollenkopf Stadium. One was, you know, Harding and East, and then Canfield's playoff game there. And I can't remember which game it was, but there were people, like, still grumbling about, like, the colors of the school. And I guess, like, there's, like, a red border around the football field, and that is, like, even in 2019 is a point of contention.
Yeah, that came about because a certain Harding booster wanted it that way, as an homage to, you know, the red that used to be the Harding Panthers, one of the Harding Panthers colors. And, you know, of course, on the West Side, you know, that was verboten. So you know, I just think that, you know, one thing about that time is that, you know, Phil brought that town together. They won a championship and kind of, in a way, became a victim of that early success, because it became expected. You know, as an outsider looking in at that team, I thought, oh my gosh, they put these two programs together, they're going to be unbeatable. And they were that first year, 14-0. And then they didn't get back to the playoffs right away. And by 1996, you know, Harding moved on. And I think, you know, Phil always kind of felt that, you know, he didn't like to talk about it, but I'm pretty sure he felt that he didn't get a fair shake there.
Well, I'll say this, where would Warren be without that state championship?
Yeah, and it's telling too that it took until, you know, after they moved on from Phil and he moved on with the rest of his career, they didn't get back to the playoffs until 2001 under a guy who was very Phil-like in Tom McDaniels. Mm-hmm. Same kind of approach to the game, same kind of approach to life, what he expected of his players, that kind of discipline, you know, and having Maurice Claret in 2001 didn't hurt.
Well, this is a 30-minute show, but I think we could go more than just 30 minutes talking about the legacy that was Phil Annarella. The calling hours tomorrow from 2 to 8 at Fitch High School's auditorium, and I don't think that auditorium is going to be big enough to hold the amount of people that are going to show their support for the Fitch family and for the Annarella family. And then the funeral Saturday at 10 a.m. at St. Stephen's Church in Niles on Park Avenue. We're going to take a break here on Vindy Sports Live. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the baseball diamond as the Mahoning Valley Scrappers begin play this weekend. And then on Sunday, at Father's Day, their home opener in Niles. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
The Vindicator. History reported daily.
Hey, this is Brian Sess with Vindy Sports Live here giving you a little sidebar. Today and tomorrow, I'll be at Cardinal Mooney's Camp of Champions. It's their annual football summer camp for kids in elementary school through eighth grade. A lot of famous football folks from the Valley come, you know, back to Don Butcher Field at Cardinal Mooney High School to, you know, interact with kids and, you know, teach them to love the game a little bit. It was a little bit rainy out there today. You could see them a little bit damp, but that didn't dampen the spirits of any of the campers. And, you know, some of the, you know, faces that were working with the kids today was a Cardinal Mooney graduate and current New England Patriots defensive lineman John Simon. Had a chance to chat with him a little bit today. He was on the infamous Patriots paintball trip on a Monday where his teammate Kyle Van Noy got shot in the face. And you can read about that and more in Friday's issue of The Vindicator. And for in Saturday's paper, you can read about a rare event that's at this camp. All four Stoops brothers, all of them football coaches, will be at the camp. That would be Bob Stoops, former Oklahoma coach and future XFL coach, Kentucky coach Mark Stoops, Alabama coaching consultant Mike Stoops, and the recently retired Youngstown State assistant Ron Stoops. So, you know, it'll be pretty packed, and, you know, those guys are all over the country, and they get to be in Youngstown together, you know, for one day. So you can read about that more on in Saturday's paper. This has been a sidebar from me, Brian Zenas, Vindy Sports Live. Read it, watch it, stream it.
Vindy Wheels, redesigned for print, online, and mobile with thousands of local rides. It's a no-pressure way to find your next vehicle or to sell your old one. At home or on the road, it's all local all the time. VindyWheels.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Williams with the Vindy Sports Live Sidebar. There are no guarantees in sports. That's why we love them. A few years ago, I remember asking a colleague of mine, a diehard Browns fan, how much he would pay to see the Browns in the Super Bowl. His answer was pretty funny. First, he said something like $300. And then he added, but I'd have to be guaranteed that they would win. I'm not sure which part of that was funnier, because trust me, there are no $300 tickets to the Super Bowl, but it was funny. I was reminded of that this week after the St. Louis Blues last Thursday won Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final to set up a 3-2 lead in Game 6 at home in St. Louis. During the game, as the Blues asserted themselves over the Boston Bruins, the price on the secondary markets for tickets for Sunday's Game 6 skyrocketed. They went up about $600 for the least expensive ticket to get in, somewhere around $2,700 to get in. That would be up in the upper deck, somewhere in the corner to get in. And the thing to remember is there are no guarantees. Now, by the time the puck dropped for that game, the price went down a little bit, but still, it would have cost at least $4,000 for two tickets just to get into the building. Again, no guarantee, but it had to be tempting. The Cup was going to be in the building, 3-2 lead. They had dominated the last two games. The Blues looked certain, and the Bruins' Tuukka Rask shut them down Sunday night. They won 5-1. Boston did to force Game 7. Can't help but wonder if anyone took up the opportunity to go for $4,000 for two seats, how they felt after the game. But I'm pretty sure today they're smiling because the Blues came through once again, winning on the road Wednesday night in Boston to win the first Stanley Cup in the 52 years of that franchise. Again, you never know what's going to happen. There are no guarantees in sports. That's why we love them.
Need cash? Place a garage sale ad in The Vindicator. Get a free garage sale kit when you call Classifieds now. 330-746-6565, option 4, or email classifieds@vindy.com.
Welcome back to Vindy Sports Live. Corey Christen here alongside Tom Williams, Brian Zenas.
Did a thing about it.
Ed Puskas.
He's got a full house today. It's hard, all right?
You know what I really had on my mind was the word Greenwood, and that is who West Middlesex beat in the state championship today out in State College. West Middlesex Big Reds winning the Class 1A crown over Greenwood. West Middlesex baseball scored 2-1 there. A lot of baseball to get to today with the
Wait, Bologna isn't Bell Greenwood scrapper. Isn't Greenwood the alias of one of our editors here now? Oh, you guys weren't here on that. Never mind. Another
Kyle
story for another time.
Shaking his head. Never,
yeah, this Kyle is, knows what I'm talking
this is,
about.
This is the primo content.
Yeah.
This is what everybody
yeah.
came
this
here
is what
for.
Everybody came here for. Yeah, we're going
to
need
to go back. I'm going to need to get filled in on that later.
Yeah, I will share. Yeah.
Good thing it's a live show and we can't go back.
Yeah, exactly.
We're a little past it. But I can start off with saying the Mahoning Valley Scrappers are back in action tomorrow. They start off in West Virginia against the Black Bears, the affiliate of the Pirates. And then the Scrappers start off at Eastwood Field on Sunday with their home schedule against the Batavia Muck Dogs. A little Father's Day baseball there. Their 21st season out there in Niles. A brand new field they laid down. They tore out the grass. They tore out the dirt. They put a new drain system in. It looks beautiful. And the roster, to say the very least, is very stacked. A lot of great starting pitching. A tall pitching staff. Everybody is listed 6'1 or taller. There's a 6'8 Liam Jenkins. There's 6'6 Ethan Hankins, who's one of the top 10 prospects in the Indians organization. Guys, I'll start with Ed here. Just from what you read up on the roster or what's going to be taking place at Eastwood Field, what's your feeling going into the season for the back-to-back Pinckney Division champions here?
Well, you know, the personnel changes, you know, so much from year to year. But I think one of the most interesting things that we're seeing is the manager is an original scrapper,
mm-hmm.
and you know, he is. We have a story coming on Sunday, so I'll let you guys know to
teaser.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. But it's interesting that he is staying with the same host family mm-hmm. this year, Malave, that he stayed with in 1999.
He must have behaved himself if he's welcome back. Yeah,
he was. I was there for Media Day Tuesday, and Steve Rubin, our Scrappers reporter, was also there talking to Malave about that. And this is the second manager in the last few years that's done that. Luke Carlin, who also played here, is now the manager of the Lake County Captains, who's the level above the Scrappers in the Indians farm system. He did the same thing, stayed with his host family too. So I think that's a really cool dynamic. A few top 10 prospects are on this roster for the Scrappers. Looking at George Valera, who's an outfielder. Ethan Hankins, I mentioned him, a starting pitcher. And then Brian Rocchio, middle infield. You know, what we saw last year with the Scrappers, they really used pitching and speed to win baseball games, and they could do that again this year.
Yeah, they definitely had some interesting guys. Like, you know, and it's kind of, it can be head-spinning to see how fast some of these guys move up. Like, you know, I'm seeing Shane Bieber's name now in Indians box scores, and I remember covering his first start for the Scrappers. I'm also just, you know, excited, you know, just, you know, see minor league baseball back. It's always quirky and kind of fun. And I believe what's the gimmick this year? They're changing their name to Pepper and Oil or something.
That's the big ticket item right there.
Yeah, that's what I'm honing in on.
Peppers and Oil. Did you see the logos they unveiled for it? The Mason jar and then Grandma Nona running around with a wood spoon.
Yeah,
ready to attack.
It's
okay,
gonna
so
give.
So that's for like one game, right?
Yeah, one game only.
Yeah,
July.
It's up there with. I think there's a Brewers affiliate where they changed the name. They changed their name. I forget what the original name was, but who cares? The new name is the Wisconsin Udder Tuggers, and it's like a cow with udders, man.
Just
that
what
is,
we need.
That's incredible.
Just what we need in a PG setting at a baseball park.
It's.
Will you buy a hat? Will you buy merchandise for it? Are you here for that?
I'm holding out for the Trash Pandas.
Okay.
You know, that might be if I go...
Rocket City.
Yeah. I do own a Trenton Thunder shirt, though, a generic one. So that's, you know, I'm slowly building the minor league baseball collection. It's not as big as the European soccer scarf collection, but, you know, one day.
So the Scrappers in their 21st season, they did a rebranding not too long ago, the Packards as well. That kind of went, you know, came and gone. But I don't know how long this Peppers and Oil thing is going to stick. It's got some national traction. With I think it was a producer for the Dan Le Batard show on ESPN was wearing one of the hats.
I think
that's pretty neat.
I think like real life Nonas, like they're hard to, you know, hard to keep down. I think, you know, they're stubborn, and I think they're here to stay.
I'm not Italian, so I can't speak for that.
Neither am I. I just made a very educated guess.
Did you learn that when you were in Italy?
What about Nonas?
Yeah.
No, I actually had a, you know, my mom took care of a, you know, woman that was in her older age, couldn't quite take care of herself. She was more of a Nona type. She would give us mason jars of, you know, various foods, you know, as a thank you, and that's how I.
Because I was pretty sure you didn't learn that when you were a high school student in South Carolina.
No.
Yeah, that was not something that was probably you were experiencing there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say this with the current Mahoney Valley Scrappers roster. It happens every year. You get the initial roster, and then it changes within about a week or two. Because all the full season teams are nearing their all-star breaks, and obviously the Scrappers are just getting going. So some of the draft picks of the Indians that are still yet to sign will likely end up here. We'll see some players from the Arizona League come and go. We'll see players that are on the current roster get boosted up. So a lot of baseball action to come out of Eastwood Field this year.
We could also see as a potential visiting player, Howland graduate Craig Lewis. You know, he was drafted into the Orioles organization. He's now, I believe, in Saratosa, Florida for the, I think it's like the Gulf Coast League or whatever the entry level, you know, league is. And he could, you know, see himself up at, you know, the Scrappers level in some time.
I think one of the most interesting things every year with the Scrappers is seeing who steps up, who hits the ground running in their first professional year. You know, last year, Tyler Freeman sticks out. There's going to be a couple guys who, you know, may not be here that long because they literally just hit the ground running and start hitting and start pitching out of their minds and they move up the chain.
The potential for that middle infield, along with Freeman last year, it was Jose Fermin, who had some injury issues this year with the Captains, but up the middle, two of the Indians' top relatively 15 or 20 prospects, and Brian Rocchio and Raynel Delgado should man that middle infield. So, again, this year we should see some good defense over at Eastwood Field. Guys, two of the four major American sports are wrapping up with their championship series. You can consider hockey American. There's a lot of American teams. The National Hockey League wrapping up last night with the St. Louis Blues winning the Stanley Cup. We're going to talk about that. And Game 6 tonight between the Golden State Warriors and the Toronto Raptors. Who wins that series? We'll talk about those and a lot more right here on Vindy Sports Live on the other side of this break. Don't go anywhere.
In the market to buy, sell, or rent a home? Check out Vindy Homes every Sunday in the Vindicator on Vindy.com or mobile. Every week, you'll find local feature homes for sale and the best area real estate listings, weekly real estate transactions, remodeling tips, apartment directories, and more. Pick up your copy of Vindy Homes this week. Log on to Vindy.com or call 330-746-6561 to subscribe today. 330-746-6561.
Need a job? Looking for employees? Visit the number one website for local jobs, VindyJobs.com. With automated search alerts, resume building tools, social media integrations, and mobile access, it's easy to find the right job or employee with VindyJobs.com.
The back-to-back Pinckney Division champions are back this weekend. Hey, everybody. Corey Christen here for your Vindy Sports Live sidebar. The Mahoning Valley Scrappers take the field this Friday at West Virginia to open their 2019 season. And then on Sunday, Father's Day, the Scrappers take the field for the first time this year at Eastwood Field, and a brand new field at that, as the Scrappers replace the dirt, the grass, the drain system, and everything. It's a beautiful new cut that they have over in the Eastwood Mall complex. As is usual, new faces will take the diamond at Eastwood Field, starting off with some top prospects in the Indian system. According to 24/7 Sports, three of the Indians' top 10 prospects are on the Scrappers roster. George Valera, an outfielder, he's ranked third. Ethan Hankins, a starting pitcher, 6'6" listed, by the way, is fifth. And then Brian Rocchio, an infielder, is listed eighth. Managing the Scrappers this year is Dennis Malave. Malave was an original Scrapper back in 1999 when the franchise started. He was here until 2001. Had a bit of a playing career in the minor leagues and then went back into coaching. He was the Cleveland Indians bullpen catcher in 07 and 08. He was the former bench coach in Akron with the Rubber Ducks, the Indians' AA affiliate last year, and now in his first managerial gig with the Scrappers. The Scrappers also boasts a big pitching staff. The shortest player on that roster is listed at 6'1", and three players on that roster are listed 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", 6'8". There are some big boys on the mound for Mahoning Valley. Should be a fun summer coming up here at Eastwood Field in Niles. For your Vindy Sports Live sidebar, I'm Corey Christen.
Everyone in her group.
The Vindicator, history reported daily.
Final segment here on Vindy Sports Live. Corey, Tom, Brian, and Ed here with you. Gentlemen, two of the four pro sports that we follow here closely in America. How about that, since I botched it last segment? Are wrapping up pretty shortly here. Last night, the Stanley Cup Final went to Game 7, and St. Louis play Gloria 4-1. The Bruins fall as the favorites to the St. Louis Blues. And Tom, I think all the credit, most of the credit, goes to Binnington, the Blues goalkeeper.
He gets a lot of credit, but and Brian and I don't think we agree on this. I mean, Binnington broke the record. Rookie goaltender, 16 wins. Nobody else had done it. He broke the record Matt Murray had set 3 years ago when he won 15, and there are other goalies that have had the 15, but I'm not sure if any other of them were in their rookie seasons like that. And there was a lot of, on Twitter, there was a lot of debating, well, Binnington has to get the Conn Smythe Trophy for Most Valuable Player, and it was like, no, based on what happened to Matt Murray, that's not gonna happen. And again, they went with the leading scorer, which was Ryan O'Reilly, which is not a bad pick either, mm-hmm. because he had some big goals when they needed them. That was the most impressive thing about the Blues, especially in the finals, they won 3 of the 4 games in Boston in the final. Mm-hmm. That I said finals. I know better. It's a final, Stanley Cup final. And they won
it's
3
tricky.
Of the 4.
It's tricky. I know. It's like I said goalkeeper, and I'm thinking soccer.
But it's Binnington, big part of that, especially early in the game last night. Until the Blues took the lead, I thought Boston dominated early. They just couldn't get it past him. And then that goal with 8 seconds to go at the end of the first period was like, oh, that had to really hurt.
Well, I mean, this close, aside maybe from Game 3 and Game 6 a little bit both ways, was really close. Boston wins Game 1. St. Louis comes back to win Game 2. Then Boston wins Game 3. Well, St. Louis comes back to win Game 4. Then St. Louis wins Game 5. Boston comes back to win Game 6. So just about as neck and neck as you could ask for.
Shout out to Dan Heiner, who last week said Tuukka Rask, the Boston goalie, had one more big game in him, and that was Sunday night's game when they won in St. Louis, sending a lot of people home disappointed and forcing the Game 7, which was great.
And again, Binnington gets most of the credit here for last night. I mean, you saw some of the plays he was diving out to make and stretching out to make to stop some Boston chances. And when you look at the Blues, you know, from worst to first, really, what was it, January? They were the worst team in the NHL?
January 3rd, they had the worst record in the NHL, and then they came on after that. Berube took over. I forget exactly where he took over. I think it was before they hit rock bottom. And Binnington got promoted and then just played well. I'm curious to what I was referring to 3 years ago. Murray did not win the Conn Smythe Trophy, but did you think he should have?
I think at the time I was lobbying for Phil Kessel to be the Conn Smythe winner because, you know, he is...
Because he's Phil Kessel.
He is a Stanley Cup champion. Well, two-time Stanley Cup champion. Also, just I think he represents, you know, every man in America. I mean, he's short, he's balding, you know, he doesn't really care about defense, he likes hot dogs. Like, these are all things that
I like
and I can get behind as an American. Also, he's American, too, so, you know...
Okay.
You gotta stick with
so no love for the goalie.
No love, but not as much love.
Okay. Do you think Binnington should have won this time?
Yes.
Or do you think
yes, because
of the, why this time instead of O'Reilly?
I think well, he did all the whole 16 games. He stood on his head for some of those.
And Murray won 15 of them.
Yeah, but it's not 16.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm fickle like that.
Ed, you get to decide.
Keep the moment of silence. Yeah.
Next question.
Let's move on to the MVP.
Brett Hull should have been the MVP for his performance in the stands.
I just want to say that I hope, you know, all the Boston fans out there can survive without a championship.
4 months
Amen.
Without
four
one.
Months.
Yeah. Amen.
Gosh. Yeah. That four-month infant in Boston that's deprived right now. How about in the NBA? What's going on over there? Golden State versus Toronto. It is currently a 3-2 series lead. The Raptors have over the Warriors. Kevin Durant, no longer in this series, had surgery today on his Achilles. And game six tonight at Oracle Arena in Oakland. I'm a firm believer that if Golden State wins tonight, they're going to win game seven. But what do you guys think about this?
I can't argue that. I mean, Golden State, until somebody beats them, and 3 years ago somebody did beat them, but it took game seven and it took a fabulous final minute of play for that. A fabulous game seven. The Cavs played a wonderful game seven that night. When they needed the big plays in the final minute, they were the team that came up with
it. They needed somebody to blow a 3-1 lead, too.
Final 4 minutes, actually. The Golden State was held without a bucket in the last, I think, 4:22 of that game.
Okay.
In game seven, so.
I believe you.
But now.
Yeah, you were partying at Magic Tree, right?
Partying is an interesting word.
Yeah,
I was at the flats. Yeah. Partying is a word.
Yeah, Brian was actually working, watching other people.
Yeah, I was watching other people party.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was in here.
I was here with you, as I recall. you had that column. That was an amazing night. It really was.
The shoe's kind of on the other foot here. As the Warriors, this is the first time in their 5-year title run that they are the quote-unquote road team, meaning they don't have home court advantage. That being said, they're down 3-2, and they have game six where they could tie the series on their home court. Does that give them an advantage tonight? Because we haven't seen the home team really show up. This series, all the games have been won, minus one of them have been won by the road team.
And really, going back to the hockey, same deal there, really. I mean, I think the road team was, won most of those games. Mm-hmm. So the common mantra has always been home team has the advantage, but I'm not sure. You know, and it really depends on, I think, how the Warriors come out first half of the first quarter. Mm-hmm. You know, are they depressed because Durant's not there, or do they come out with some extra fire? Those are the questions that will be answered early.
Well, we saw some people who weren't depressed that Kevin Durant got hurt, and that was the Raptor fan base. Many of those, I'm sure, who criticized, and to wrap up the show here, how about Team USA, the women's national team over in France, the Women's World Cup, a 13-0 winner over Thailand the other day, Alex Morgan, a five-piece, five goals, for one of the best players in the world. And Brian, what do you think about the whole talk of them celebrating too much? Personally, I don't think they celebrated enough, but what's your take on this whole
I think,
deal?
I think they needed to cool it after like nine goals. Like Megan Rapinoe celebrating the goal to put it up, 9-0. It's like she's already won a World Cup before. You're playing a Thailand team which had two players who played college soccer in the U.S. and the rest who simply can't be accounted for as far as their soccer experience. And you're going to celebrate like, you've won the final. Like, look, all four of us here, we're here in this job because none of us were good enough at sports. Like,
speak for yourself.
Oh, hold up. Yeah, what are you saying?
I resemble that remark.
Pick a golf course around here, buddy.
Let's be real here.
Golf's not a sport.
Yeah. And we've all probably been on the receiving end of some, sports beat down and probably didn't appreciate it when people, rubbed it, in our faces. And then to turn around and say, well, it's the women's national team, they're fighting to get equal pay and whatever, and we should just be behind them no matter what. And I'm like, no. Like, I don't even disagree with them running up the score on Thailand. Like, in soccer, it's tactically advantageous to, dump as many goals on you can, but I don't buy this. Well, some of the substitutes never played in a World Cup game before. It's their first goal, and let them go crazy. And like, no, like they should act like they've been there before.
Yeah, there's something to be said for the NFL player who scores and simply hands the ball to the official, rather than acting like he just won the Super Bowl.
I think it's Chad Johnson, basically. Chad Johnson versus anyone else, I would say. I'll say this though. First of all, it's a goal differential thing that these teams play for. Goal differential settles a lot of things in this World Cup. So the U.S. scoring 13 goals puts them however many ahead of whoever's second in their pool. And that helps them gain seeding for the next round. I'll say that much. No doubt equal pay is an issue that needs to be addressed. But just game purposes, they work their whole lives to get to that stage. I don't care if it's once, twice, three times they're there. And I just think that celebrate. Why not? You're there for a reason.
I mean, 2014, Men's World Cup saw Germany take Brazil to the woodshed in a semifinal, in a big game. And I think at at the point where they got to like five goals, they stopped celebrating. And I mean, that was something worth celebrating because, you know, Brazil, soccer's all they've got.
Brazil was,
and they were, yeah, they were a loaded team at the time. And if you're going to, you know, if you're able to dump seven goals on them, like, that's an amazing achievement. But even then, you know, they practice sportsmanship.
Well, we're kind of looking at soccer right now, but in baseball you have all this controversy about unwritten rules. You know, Madison Bumgarner lost his mind because Max Muncy watched a ball go into the ocean. And Muncy's like, if you don't want me to watch the ball, go get it.
Go get it, or maybe just don't throw that meatball up that Muncy smacked out of the McCovey Cove. This is the same thing with bat flipping, you know? You want hitters to stop bat flipping, why don't you try to get them out? Pretty simple, easier said than done, at least on my end.
Yeah, I think what's going to be interesting is in their next game, because I assume that, I mean, they're such a heavy favorite to win the World Cup that there's probably going to be another opportunity for a blowout situation. I'm curious to see, do they continue the celebrating, or if any of this has been relayed to them, if there's any message of let's, you know, keep it.
They seem pretty unrepentant about it from, you know, what I've heard.
I don't think they should be either.
From what I've heard, this next team was lower ranked going into this World Cup than Thailand was. So
that next team is Chile, and that is a 12 noon kickoff on Sunday. Gentlemen, good stuff today, as always. Plenty more to follow on Vindy.com and in the Mothership newspaper edition of The Vindicator. That's going to wrap up today's show right here on Vindy Sports Live. Thank you so much for listening. So for Tom, Brian, and Ed, my name is Corey Christen. We'll see you next week right here on Vindy Sports Live.
Thanks,
Kyle. Thank you.